The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
We're back. It's Sunday again. Sunday keeps coming around.
It happens every week.
Every week.
It's just
it's Sunday. I don't get it.
It's like we never left.
It never takes a vacation Sunday.
We are all wearing different clothes than we were wearing last time.
That's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And my hair is longer than it was a week ago. So
we're getting ready to overshare.
It
Everyone
is
plug
totally
your ears.
A different Sunday. Welcome to We the People Radio. You are listening to KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. We are with Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin, We the People Radio. Go to wethepeopleradio.us. Check out our webpage. Everything you need to know about today's guest is on that webpage, as well as a direct link to any show that we've ever done. And we'd love to have you join the chat room again at wethepeopleradio.us or give us a call at 530-605-4567. Did I ever tell you about the time that somebody asked me my private phone number and I gave them that phone number because I say it so much?
That's kind of
And
funny.
Then they left messages here for me?
Well, that's not.
Did I ever tell you about that?
No. You have to be supervised at all times, and so do I. Bob?
I saw some of those messages.
Anybody top that?
That's pretty bad. I used to answer the phone all the time at home and everywhere, you know, George's equipment, because, you know, we were there for 13 years and I was there a lot at night.
Yeah.
So I answered the phone at all these weird hours, you know. It's taken a long time. There are still times I pick up the phone, George's equipment. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
So
okay, disclaimer, Aaron does not do well on paint fumes, so anything can happen today.
Anything can happen. It's not as exciting as pain medication, however. It's the pain medication we really want to stay away from.
Or a combo of the two.
That's when all bets are off.
So elections are over.
Thank God.
Man.
Doesn't it seem like 100 years ago that
it was
Tuesday?
I know. This morning I got up and I thought, did we talk about the elections last
weekend?
I totally
did that last night when I was laying
And
down.
Then I realized that they were just on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'm so glad not to be hearing the ads. I understand they
there
have to
that.
Be done, but I'm really glad.
There is that. You know, it's funny. We don't get any robocalls.
Mm-hmm.
I get why they do the robocalls. And you know, just a word out there to people who receive those calls. The calls and the mailers and things are often targeted for people who haven't voted yet. So if once mm-hmm. you turn in your absentee ballot, a lot of times that stops because they know you've already made up your mind, which is, you know, pretty advanced technology there.
So the point is they really can track who's supposed to be voting and who isn't.
Well,
clearly.
I mean, you can actually pull lists of who has voted. I mean,
yeah.
We walked precincts in Red Bluff and what? And
Carl and
Bill
Linda are
wants
out.
Me to say that Carl
Relay
and Linda.
For Life.
Oh, okay.
They are out at.
Our human teleprompter just came in.
He just walked in.
So we were reading
the
teleprompter with the not. We couldn't talk and read the teleprompter because we had to actually listen to it.
Well, you know,
it's old style.
It's interesting
yes,
because
I was getting to that. KCNR is at Relay for Life at Shasta College this weekend, and Carl and Linda will be checking in with us at some point as the Relay for Life nears a close of the 24-hour walk for cancer research.
Yeah, they generally nab about 500,000 to 750,000. They do pretty well.
Sponsoring.
So anyway,
okay. So the primary is over,
yeah.
And the good news is that the changes didn't stop before they hit California this time,
mm-hmm.
like they did in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So for all those people who think, oh, we're never going to make any change here. Big union decisions
and,
in San
yes,
Jose.
And I want to point out, I picked up Sacramento Bee on my way in today. There's a lot of stuff on the front cover of the Sacramento Bee that refers to not only Wisconsin, but San Jose and San Diego in the state of California due to the voters kind of putting some moratoriums on public employee pensions. And it's just setting the stage now for what we've got ahead of us through the summer and into the fall for the November elections. And it's going to gear up, actually.
Sure. Well, and before that, we'll hit the budget.
Mm-hmm.
The budget's got to be done here. You know, it's supposed to be done by the 15th. It's the 10th. So this week is D-Day.
Yeah.
And Of course, it's always police, fire, schools that take the big hits. We can justify the tax increases.
Because they know that those are the things that are most important to us.
Yeah.
And I do want to say that I think that this election will probably be one of the most important in our nation's history. And the time that we have left before November is really critical. And I think it's really important to work smarter and not harder, and to really be careful of where we spend our time if we are involved in the political process. Make sure that what you're doing is something that you can actually affect change.
Exactly. And, you know, my brother lives in Walnut Creek, right? So they're typically, 100%, represented by liberals. And my brother's always frustrated. Well, this time in their Senate race, he had a conservative guy that was within 5 or 6 points here in the primary. So I sent him an email and I said, hey, you guys ought to get behind that guy. And he said, well, I'll debate anybody, anytime, anywhere, but I'm not going to support any politicians. And I was like, okay, you can keep getting what you're getting because mm-hmm. you're not doing anything about it.
Right. Exactly.
Bob's giving us the high sign. What's happening,
okay,
Bob?
Well, we have, first of all, Carl is on the line.
Oh, nice.
Live from Shasta College at Relay for Life.
Hey, Snazzy. Carl.
Hey, good morning.
How's it going out there?
Well, we're winding down here. We're in the last hour of the 24-hour Relay for Life. It started, of course, yesterday at 9 o'clock. Gosh, a couple thousand people out here, people walking and running throughout the day and the night. Music, bands, food, the whole thing. And it's a celebration of life out. And I don't know how much money they raised out here, but it has to be in the thousands, of course.
I know historically they've done, I think, a minimum of 225,000. In the past.
Well, there's of all the ones in California, the events were like the 12th largest.
Yeah.
So you figure out of like 400 different events. And I'm going to just say that Santos Urban and his brother Santos, of course, is our sales director, and his brother ran 50 miles.
Awesome.
Yesterday. What? And into the night. Oh, yeah. It was, the rest of us managed to put in like 10. But they ran 50 apiece, though, to raise money. But it was a great effort, and I would just urge people next year, if they haven't ever been out here, just come out and watch this.
Yeah, I've done it a few times, and it's one of the most extraordinary things that I've seen this community put on.
And it truly is, and it's a day of celebration that when you start off with the survivors' lap, and there's hundreds where there used to be just dozens, and now there's hundreds. It's the inroads are being made, but the fight goes on.
It does. Well, thank you for being out there, Carl.
You bet. Well, thank you for letting me spend a couple minutes on the show here.
Not a problem. Hey,
thanks for letting us have the rest of the 2 hours.
Yeah, thank you for letting us have the show.
Well, I hope you get your brother if I heard that right, that he can't support a conservative. Is that what I heard?
No. He said he's willing to, debate anybody on the issues, but he doesn't want to support a politician.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure how he thinks our government works. Apparently, we need to discuss that.
Okay, well, look, you have a great day.
Thanks, Carl.
Guys, don't work too hard out there.
Have a great time.
Thanks,
okay,
Carl.
Bye-bye.
Carl and Linda from KCNR.
And I'm guessing that it might be time to take our first break.
And we do have Arcadi on the line when we come back.
Wonderful.
All right, we will hold him hostage for 2 minutes and then come right back with everybody. You're listening to We the People Radio. Catch us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We always have a very active chat room. We are on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
You say you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something. something, or you'll fall for anything.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Don't forget to jump on the chat room at wethepeopleradio.us. So, before we jump into Behind the Iron Curtain Part 2 with Arkady Faktorovich, he is our wonderful... say that again.
It's Faktorovich. You just have to say it really fast. You got to say it like doctors sign prescription pads. That's the way I like it.
But Arkady's been here before. He was here a few weeks ago.
We got the Arkady part right.
Talking about... things that he sees coming down in America that he left behind in the Soviet Union. But before we jump on the line with Arkady, we're going to go to Lydia, who's on the phone. Good morning, Lydia.
Good morning, girls. Hey, I just wanted to jump in here real quick. I was at the Relay for Life yesterday. I did the survivor walk, being a 26-year survivor. But Linda Bott sang the national anthem, and then she also sang an inspirational song, Why We Run, as we were doing the survivor lap. And I just want to say she is fantastic, and everybody just loved her.
That is fantastic, and congratulations to you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye,
congrats, Lydia. Robert, this just in? What do you have?
Oh, Arkady's here.
Good morning, Arkady.
Good morning.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
You'll forgive me for destroying your last name?
No, you didn't destroy it completely.
Great.
You didn't destroy it completely. That's nice. Very politically correct. I like that. I'm going to use that.
Thank you.
You didn't mess it up completely. You know, I got a lot of uses for that. I'm going to use that. That's a good one. Okay, so how do you say your last name for real?
Last name?
Yeah.
Last name, Faktorovich.
Faktorovich.
Okay, I knew it was the beginning had the accent.
We got it. And shame on me, my sister-in-law is Russian, I should know better.
Well.
Well, we've Americanized her, so now she sounds like the rest of us.
Oh, man.
That's good.
Hey, welcome back. So we chatted yesterday about all the possible, maybe it was the day before, but all the possible things we could talk about today, and then what'd you decide? Where are we going?
I don't know. I would like to, there's so many things that we can talk about. But we were talking about that for your listeners might be more interesting to talk about October Socialist Revolution and a little bit about Federal Reserve. There are so many things that I can talk about, modern politics, what's happening. So you take your pick.
You also said, I remember now, because I put it out on the email, you also said that the comparison between Obamacare and the Fed. And I was like, okay.
Yes. Let's talk about that.
Staticky.
Basically, what happened, that Federal Reserve system, or federal central, it's not federal, has nothing to do with federal.
Right.
Federal Reserve Bank is a central bank, and it was conceived in 1913. Actually, it was conceived in 1910 at the meeting of several crooks, seven of them, in Jekyll Island in 1910, and it resulted in the Federal Reserve Act that was... forced on American people by the first similarity between Obamacare and the Federal Reserve, that at the time, in 1913, Woodrow Wilson was president, who was a Democrat and a socialist. The House, both houses were in Democratic hands. Same thing happened with Obamacare, with... we have the same structure. All government, the Senate and Congress and presidency were in Democratic hands. The Federal Reserve Bank or Central Bank, it's bank number 4. We had 3 central banks before that. The first bank was established by Alexander Hamilton, and he convinced George Washington to sign on. And the second bank and the third bank is remembered by a lot of Americans from the history lessons as a bitter war where Andrew Jackson won with one vote of his vice president to suffocate the third bank. All of the banks, all four of them, were conceived under deceit and fraud. So in 1913, the push was spearheaded by Nelson Aldrich, who was a Republican whip, and in the Senate, and they created two bills. One was Banker's Bill, and they designed that, and they let the public know that the Aldrich plan was Banker's plan, and the public didn't want Banker's plan. But then they have another bill that was supposedly anti-banker's bill. And the anti-banker's bill won. The only problem was there were two identical bills, and the Federal Reserve Act was passed.
Hey, Arcadi?
Yes?
We better take we're going to take a quick break and have you hang up, and then call us back and see now all of a sudden it's fine. There's something going on in the phone line. We're flipping switches here.
It almost
like that.
Sounds like wind interference or something strange, but it's definitely on the phone line.
Okay. Would you, I don't have a landline. I have only,
Well, it's good now.
Phone.
It's good now. Okay. Keep going.
Oh, okay. So I can be here. I just step.
Okay. We're not taking a break. We're done. We're over that idea.
Somebody's just doing a bad job of tapping the phone line.
We got another rookie on the phone tap? That's terrible. You think we'd rate something better?
Yeah.
All right, sorry
I thought
about
we were
that.
More important
we were just
than
losing
that.
So much of it with static. We thought, well, maybe we need to...
Yes, oh, here's some advice. When you tap the phone line, try not to let the callers know that you're on the line.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Are you thinking that I'm tapping and talking at the same time?
No. No.
That was just out there for whoever is.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just
being. Yeah, if you're going to spy on us, do a better job.
We're just being smart, Alex. Our
so basically coming back to the similarities. Let me be brief. So the one bill lost, the one bill won, and both of them were totally identical. With Obamacare, was the same thing. They created an incredible secrecy, and they didn't create the two bills, but the similarity between the two, that they excluded a lot of most of the Republicans from participating, and therefore they were forcing it on us because, and this time, Obama and his minions have press on their side. So, but there are eerie similarities between the two, between two processes. So the Federal Reserve System, in my opinion, couldn't be come to fruition without doing certain things in 1913. 1913 was a bad year for our nation. Congress ratified 16th Amendment, 17th Amendment, in the beginning of the year. The most damaging was 17th Amendment. And 17th Amendment killed our representative republic.
Explain to our listeners what the 17th Amendment is.
Now, 17th Amendment changed the Constitution. Our founding fathers decided that... the senators have to be appointed by their legislature, meaning the state legislature, and they were sent to Washington, and Senate was to be a filter, like a kidney, to filter out bad legislature, bad laws. When the 17th Amendment changed the appointment of senators to election of senators by the public. When that happened, the senators no longer bowing to their respected legislature powers and governments of their states, and they're not as responsive. Let me give you an example. Let's say if Governor Brewer of Arizona would call Johnny McCain and tell him at that time, before 1913, that, hey, John, I don't want you to vote and help Obama to sue the state. We need to protect ourselves from this influx of Mexican terrorists and gangsters across the border. If John McCain would refuse, he would be recalled next day and replaced with someone else. That's how much power states lost as a result of 17th Amendment. Without 17th Amendment, Federal Reserve Act would never see the light of day. And 16th Amendment, it's a different amendment that they hoist on us. And now it's an excuse for taxing our personal wages, and it's an income tax, but it's not really true. Because if you will look at the debates at the on the Senate floor regarding 16th Amendment, the 16th Amendment it wasn't supposed to be giving government additional taxing powers. The senators debated on the floor to tax or not to tax capital gains on the stock that's owned by individuals. That's all it was. And Senator Aldrich wrote it in such a way that it appeared the Senate, that the Congress can tax our wages, which is not true. Basically, what was happening that without 16th and 17th Amendment, the Federal Reserve Act wouldn't be possible, and we wouldn't be taxed as far as our wages are concerned. In fact, the Supreme Court of our country, who twisted itself a lot of times in the press hole, was quite consistent, amazingly enough, regarding 16th Amendment, and they declared in the Pollack case and other cases that 16th Amendment didn't give the federal government any additional taxing powers. So, but because of this 16th Amendment, the way it worded, all of us are running to the post office on April 15th and being very happy, beating the deadline, sending our 1040 forms, which wasn't supposed to be at all. So, 1913 was a bad year for our nation, and I believe that in 1913 we lost our representative republic and we became a populist democracy, and usually populist democracies are sliding into tyrannies, historically. And but that's good news. But there is a good news. Good news is that we have a Tea Party now. We have people that waking up to the fact that something wrong with our picture. And Federal Reserve system and Federal Reserve Bank is the culprit of all our economic problems, inclusive of debt and inflation. And people know more about it now, but if you want me to tell you the history, how it came about and how it works, I'll be happy to do it. Or I can tell you about October Revolution and other good stuff and interesting stuff. So you take your pick. In my store, I have a lot of stories.
We like stories. We're big fans of stories. We should do the October Revolution thing, because you gave me a thumbnail sketch and I realized that I didn't know anything about any of that. So
And that makes a point for me that this gentleman knows more about our country's history than we do.
That's what Lori just said on the chat room. She's like, you should be listening to him.
You guys are kind, but let me tell you the history of October Revolution, because, and I love this story, because October Revolution...
Okay, but wait, hold that thought. We have to take a swift break first. Sorry about that.
Okay, no problem.
We lured you in there. Did you see us do that?
Yeah, we lured you in and then
ba-boom, dropped the hammer.
Dropped you.
Okay. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be back. We got to thank our advertisers.
No,
we appreciate them. We're here at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
change. August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Submission.
Dominance.
Submission.
Dominance.
Submission.
Okay, that's an uplifting song.
Yeah, thank but it's you. Easy to remember the words.
Submission.
Dominance. I know, it's easy to remember the words. Submission.
What show is this? Oh, yeah, WeThePeopleRadio.us. Jump on the chat room or give us a call.
Yeah, because Dot Crazy Town was taken.
It was. Sometimes that would have been more apropos.
All right.
So we're back.
Okay, we're going to learn about the October Revolution.
Okay, October Socialist Revolution. It wasn't really a revolution. Oh. It was a well-planned and executed, one of the best intelligence operations that was perpetrated by one nation on another. And what was happening that, let me go a little bit back. Let me give you the scenario of how Russia came to the situation it is today. And it all started long ago, like a lot of things that happened, bad and good, they starting a long time ago. It started with Alexander II, the Tsar of Russia, who was, I would say, Russian Abraham Lincoln. They were very similar guys. They did similar things. Both were statesmen and thinker. And Alexander II is the one who ended slavery or serfdom in Russia in 1861. Abe Lincoln followed suit in 1864. They both were kind of doers. They were trying to make their country better. Both men were assassinated. Alexander II is the one who sold Alaska to the United States because he couldn't defend that landmass with the armed forces he had at hand and financial situation of Russia. And he was assassinated on the 8th attempt and was succeeded by his son, Alexander III, who was a very tall, very strong man who was possessing inhuman physical strength and no brains. Because of Alexander III, Russia started its slide into a second-rate country. What was happening, Alexander III decided to reverse whatever his father was doing, and Alexander II was working on the constitution or a dome of laws by Speransky, and he wanted to have a parliamentary republic, modeling it after England. Who knows where Russia would be today if he would live 2 days longer, because he was to sign that document. And he was assassinated by a terrorist organization called People's Will. And the rest of the story is to follow. Alexander III started to reverse everything his father did. He envisioned Russia as a homogeneous society where everybody would be blue-eyed and blonde. And he started to implement those policies with the Jews, of course. And Russia at that time didn't know state-sponsored anti-Semitism. It was instituted by Alexander III. His son, Tsar Nicholas II, was following the same situation. They established the settlement line for Jews. The Jews couldn't own property. They couldn't involve in certain professions. And Trotsky used to say, say that Nicholas I inherited the imperial country and the revolution. That explains why so many Jews were participating in the uprising that happened in October of 1917. But actually, the uprising of October Revolution, which is, by the way, that so-called revolution is a twin sister of French Revolution. And if one of your listeners would like to understand the mind of the left, the history of French and October Revolutions are a must read, because you will understand how those so-called revolutions came about and who was behind it. So, October Socialism, at that time, Russia and Germany were involved in the First World War, and the World War was a real estate war, where Austro-Hungary and Turkey and Bulgaria and Germany on one side, French and British and Russia on another side, and it was a war that had an incredible consequences in our world, which is, we can feel it today. So, the one of the traitors, basically, October Revolution was done by German government because Germany didn't want Russian army on the Eastern Front. Turkey, who was German ally who participated in the war, got beaten by the Russian army, and Germany wanted to have a separate peace treaty with Russia. The Russian Tsar, Nicholas I, and his entourage decided to fight on. At that time, a very big man by the name of Alexander Parbus, who actually single-handedly created the situation of October Socialist Revolution, who was a devilish genius, came to Berlin. Alexander Parbus' real name was Israel Lazar Gelfand, who was a Jew who immigrated to Switzerland in 1887, got his doctorate degree in economics, made a lot of money, was the one of the wealthiest person in Europe, hello Mr. Soros, and he was instrumental in going to Ministry of Foreign Affairs with the letter of recommendation from the German ambassador in Turkey, and he presented German government in the most flash building in Berlin, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, a 20-page memorandum. The that memorandum was a genius document because of its simplicity. It shows German all the weak points of Russian Empire, and he convinced German government that the only way to get the Russian army off the Eastern Front is to create a revolution and use the war as a cataclysm of the turning that war into revolution and civil war inside the Russian Empire. And he succeeded. And the way it was done, and basically this is the tactics of the left today, and the tactics that was picked up by Saul Alinsky, because he probably read a couple of books of Russian history, I don't know for sure. But what was happening, that German government gave Alexander Parvus a million Deutschmarks in gold. If you will compare the $1 million of Deutschmark in 1914 with today, we're talking about astronomical figure to do a subversive work in Russia. And what those troops did now, they're all traitors. Alexander Parvus, in my opinion, was a bad guy. Also, Trotsky and Lenin, but Lenin was even near the revolutionary movement, so-called, because everything was done by Alexander Parvus. and he created newspapers that would print articles. He would coordinate with the German high command. One thing that they did in 1905, they would print an article in the Russian newspapers of the bad situation with Russian banks. They created a panic, and the public withdrew tons of money, tons of rubles from Russian banks, and Interior Minister Vitev was furious. And they start printing articles how bad the war is, that proletariat should unite, that we have to be peaceful, that war is evil, and all other good stuff. So all of these activities and all the gazillions of Deutschmarks that Parvus and his group of crooks received went into destruction of the Russian Empire and removal of the German army, which they succeeded. And then he found Lenin and other guys who were basically puppets that were manipulated by Parvus and the German high command to do the following. They started to influence minds of Russian people into believing that the war is lost, which was not true. They organized unions that would pay for strike. If you organize a strike, they would pay the worker more money per day than he would earn working. They would pay, let's say, a monthly salary for organizing shooting with the firearms on the streets. So they created the appearance of uncertainty, and they started to create a lot of havoc. And, of course, Nicholas II abdicated the throne, which was the February Revolution, and they promised a lot of things, in their propaganda, land to peasants, factories for workers, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the Russian Revolution really was a theater where there was a puppeteer who was Parvus, and he was moving his pieces all around, like in the puppet show, and we still consider the Russian Revolution as the revolution. Actually, it was a coup d'etat. Ironically, that it created a boomerang that hit Germany about a year later, where Germany lost the war. The Kaiser Wilhelm II had to run to Denmark to save his life. And because of the situation with the end of the World War One, we had the World War Two, which was a continuation of the World War One, because there were tremendous devastation. There were. I don't want to go in detail into history because I don't want to put some listeners to sleep. But this is basically was a brilliantly conceived and executed intelligence operation of subverting a government of another nation. And something like this we see today in our country here. That's why I'm talking about the revolution in October. We have certain people, which I call the fifth column, in our country, and I believe in our government. And that's very scary because we have stories that coming out not only from the White House but also from the press about things that are not true. And yet they perceived as a Bible truth. So the result of the so-called October Revolution that traitors and crooks like Lenin and Trotsky got into power, and Russia lost the war, even though England and France celebrated the as victorious powers, but Russia wasn't victorious because their economy was in shambles, and that's what brought Russia into a second-rate nation. So we have seen through history how certain actions of an individual have such long unintended consequences. And even today, Russia is still a second-rate country, even though they're trying to perceive the world that they're a superpower. They never will. And the reason is in Constitution, because Alexander II didn't live long enough to sign the Constitution that will create a parliamentary republic. Even today in Russia, the property rights of the individual are not separated from the governmental powers. So they are tied together. That's why nobody who is Russian and who is oligarch invests money in Russia today, because it can be taken away by the government at any time. So the Russian economy today is in bad shape. Their economy based on the commodities only. They're selling oil and gas, and that's the only thing that they can sell. There is nothing else for them to sell. And 80% of GDP, or gross domestic product, comes from sales of oil and natural gas. So when oil drops in price, so does the ruble, and so does the level of living in Russia. Russia is not doing well at all today, and until they change their constitution and model it, hopefully after American constitution, they have no prayer of becoming a normal country. So what else would you like me to talk about?
that was awesome. Actually, Russian history in like 22 minutes. Where were you while we were all in school? See, we would have actually passed the test. We have to take a really quick break, or we'll be up against the top of the hour. We're going to come back with Arkady Fakhtorovich here in a couple of seconds. You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Fantabulous night to make romance. Need the cover of October skies.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Before we wrap up the first hour, we're going to jump back on with our Arkady Fakhtorovich.
You're doing it so well now.
That rolled right off.
I like it that Elizabeth has to do the introduction. She has to keep saying it over and over. Okay, Arkady, we've got 4 minutes before we have to hear what's happening in the latest news. But I guess the one really, I mean, there were a lot of points, obviously. But the one thing, there are a lot of similarities. And that control of the media is a biggie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, Parr was a genius. He realized that control of the media creates an influence on the populace mind, and his slogans were very simple. In fact, that the slogans that are used today by the left in this country and all over the world came under the pen of Alexander Parvus a century ago. Nothing is new. What Russian crooks used to subvert their own country, proletariat of the world unite, it was Parvus's slogan. He created it. Land to peasants, factories to workers, classless society, and so nothing is new. And he realized early on that he can effectively influence the public opinion, especially the mob, because by utilizing the press, and he would import the latest printing equipment and print newspapers like Pravda and Izvestia, which is Pravda is the truth and Izvestia is news, and these two papers were born because of Parvus's doing, and they became an official papers of communist regime, of course. But that was done long ago, and both French Revolution and October Revolutions were driven by mob. And Parvus was incredibly skillful by inciting the mob, and I view Occupied Wall Street as one of those tactics that's very appealing to the mob, because the mob is incapable of intelligent thought. So the short slogans are very appealing to the mob, such as Bush lights, children die. That's the only thing that the mob understands, and the unbuttoned mob is the mob who followed Bolsheviks and actually did the taking over the power illegally, to say the least, and forcing on Russian people the most cruel regime that ever existed, as much as it was in France in 18th century and beginning of 19th century, at the time of Robespierre and French Revolution.
All right, Arkady, we're getting cut off by the news, but we're coming back because with you for the next hour because we want to hear more about this. Okay, guys, real quick, you are listening to We the People Radio. Go to the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Tell them the rest, Bob.
More of We the People straight ahead here at KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hey, I hope you got your cup of coffee, had a great 5 minutes off. We're back for history lessons. American history, Russian history, more than we ever knew. It's a sad commentary when someone who was not born in this country knows more about our history than we do, don't you think?
Sure. I mean,
you're so kind.
There are, you know, it's interesting. It's like anything else. I mean, when you make a choice to go somewhere, you, well, look at people who travel. You know,
you want to know about where you're going.
Well, look at how, I mean, when I lived over in Eureka, there were tons of people who traveled through the Redwoods who knew more about the Redwoods than the people who lived there, because we were living and working there. We weren't going to
Charleston. Well, and it's like when my sister-in-law became a legal U.S. citizen, she knew more about the structure of our government and, you know, the checks and balances system and the responsibilities of each branch more than anybody I ever knew. I mean, she said it was embarrassing to find out that she knew more than people that lived here.
Well, it's the same with people who convert to a religion.
Yeah.
I mean, they go to classes as a grown-up, you know, other people who are raised in a certain religion. You know, you go to classes as a kid. If you don't do any study as an adult, you know, you tend to be uninformed.
So we are behind the Iron Curtain Part 2 with Arkady Faktorovich.
And we actually...
I'm really having fun.
She's speeding it up now. She's going with my doctor's signature pronunciation. You know, the October Revolution in 30 minutes or less, that's got to be some kind of record.
Oh, thank you.
That was awesome. So we got to the part, we were talking before the break, you were speaking about all the slogans and things that went on in the media, and interestingly enough, we see a lot of those slogans now.
Yes.
In America.
For instance, the fist. That was created then. The fist was used by National Socialist Workers' Party, which was Nazi Party. And the fist was used by communists in Russia, in Korea, and China. That's a uniform symbol of workers of the world unity and social justice and all other stuff that came out basically under the pen of one man. His name was Alexander Parvus. And nothing is new. Everything that you say see today was already done and was happening. We had trade unions, and we have them today. They do marching on the streets of Los Angeles with the communists of the United States. They use the same slogans, the same techniques, the same tactics. And they become very indignant and offended, and they fight. And if somebody uses their tactics against them. And that's why people that telling the story, like me, sometimes are vilified, and we call different names. And I perceived in certain circles as a crook, because I'm telling things that people, number one, they're not aware of, and number two, they don't believe it because of their preconceived opinions. And that's normal. And it's normal not to know something. I don't know everything. I would like to, but then I'm not God. So there's a lot of people that are ignorant about one thing or another. They're busy with their lives and making a living and stuff like that. So when you are happy and free, one thing that I are kind of sad about, that when you are happy and free and you're not appreciative of the fact that you are not happy and free because of certain things, that's the kind of ignorance that is very dangerous, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
We concur. We concur. We agree.
Yeah, I know. I'm preaching to the choir here.
there might be some non-choir members listening in.
They'll never admit it, but they are.
Well, but it's true. It's reality. I'm very fortunate in my life. I live 30 years under the communist regime, and I lived 35 years under the system of freedom and freedom of individual. And that pains me when I see that fifth column in this country plotting and working tirelessly to destroy this wonderful country. And Agenda 21 is a bright example of it. It's an insidious program created by the United Nations, and majority of people are not aware of it. And that's too bad, because it's been around for a long time. It's instituted by no other but Bush, the senior, that signed on with 170-something countries to implement this program. And we see it all around us. And the insidiousness of this system, that it's not a coup in the style of Alexander Parbus and other coups like in Chile and other countries. It's a slow-growing disease, and it's affects all levels of our society, starting with our governments, our local governments, and that's very, very dangerous. In fact, I was attending a meeting where Rosa Corey was speaking yesterday, and I told her that I told her that I will be on your program today, and she knows Erin, and she also said hello. An incredible speaker, very eloquent, very bright lady, who is a liberal Democrat, and yet she is intellectually honest, and she called a spade a spade a spade a spade, and she's discovered it. And it's a problem. It's a big problem. But it wouldn't be a problem if people will know about it. So like anything else, secrecy mm-hmm. is a very bad situation.
Yeah.
And so.
That's always the ugly, you know, the ugly part is that when people have no clue and they wake up later, mm-hmm. I mean, like all these protests, I mean, I just think everybody must know. You see these people marching in the streets, advocating anarchy, with the big socialist, you know, fist, and mm-hmm. you know, all this advocating, collectivism, and how do they figure that's going to turn out?
I mean, this has never worked in any country.
Well, again, they don't know their history.
But again, the interesting footnote to that is that this form of government was never designed to work. The socialism as the first stage of communism, and in order to understand what this socialism-communism ideology is all about, one has to read the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, and some other works, and mainly Saul Alinsky just was a Marxist who picked up on it. But basically, all of this is grabbing money and power. That's all it is. And total domination over the populace. So the globalists that we are in, observing today, the Bilderbergers and Rockefellers and people that advocated global government and stuff, it's all done because they want a control. It's all about control. It's a tyranny disguised itself into something better than it actually is. I'll give you an example. If you have, let's say I will tell a fellow that, you know, you are wonderful because it's you. But you see, you can look at this guy over there. He is not as good as you because he looks different, he has different background and stuff. So he's an enemy, and he's the one who is responsible for all the bad things that happened in your life. That's the old trick, as old and this as this planet, or as long as we humans were on this planet, because that's how a politician or opportunist is creating a base that propels him or her to a certain level of power. That's why we had a state-sponsored anti-Semitism in Russia. We had, we have, even in Japan, who is 100% homogeneous society, they have a small group of people that's involved in leather making. They are outcasts. So we humans sometimes, for some reason, we need to create that enemy that we can unite against. If we don't have that enemy, we have to create it somewhere else. We have to create, let's say, a crisis, an Earth crisis, that Earth is in danger. We have this climate change hoax that was actually described in the report of 1962 that was ordered by McNamara, and it was not an invention of Al Gore, of course. It was a program that designed to unify the populace. And in the same report, it's called the Report from Iron Mountain. It was leaked by one of the scientists that was working on that report, trying to tell the government how to overcome certain uprisings and how to stay in power. And they found out that the only unifying factor of uniting people around the government before it was war. Today, it's not war alone. So they needed something. And they kind of experimenting on this crazy idea of an interplanetary invasion. And if you recall, there was this situation where they were playing some kind of a Martian invasion on the radio, and there was a panic.
Oh, yeah.
It was by design. It was by design. Then they decided that interplanetary thing and those kooky things about greys and stuff that they're walking and they are kidnapping people and all other stuff didn't have credibility. The public didn't believe it because there was not a credible evidence. So then they came up with this, Earth is in danger. We have to save the planet, and the Green Movement was born. And now they trying to unite everybody and destroy the economies of countries like the United States and Europe and others. Europe is not that difficult now because they're turned socialist, true and true. And that's where it's all coming from. It's just a group of insane people that believe that by reducing the world population from 7 billion to 1 billion, it will be easier to control. It's all about control. It's nothing like they say, that we are for the little guy, that we are going to help you. And the only system that really helps in people, it's a system that provides individual freedom. And United States is the only experiment that ever succeeded to give that. And the individual freedom cannot succeed, cannot remain without freedom of commerce. That's not my words. I'm not that smart. It was said by John Adams, our second president. And it's so true. And you look at the business environment today, and I was in, self-employed for 28 years, and I can tell you, today, 80-plus percent of any business activity in this country requires a license. In other words, in order to build something, to invent something, you have to ask permission from your government.
Yeah.
But. And that's bad, and that's kind of creeping in very slowly, and that's what the Fabian socialist theory is all about, that was created in England by no other but Bernard Shaw, who was writing plays, but was a very, very bad dude, because he was believing that if you're getting old and sick, you have to be exterminated. Such a kind person he was. But anyway, we have a small number of people that are deranged, all of them. If you think that you have to reduce the world population so you can easier, it will be easier to control them, something is wrong with you. And unfortunately, some of our elites are believing this. And they sugarcoat it, and you look at the Agenda 21 and sustainable development, and being a planning commissioner in my small town, I went to a training for planning commissioners, and they were talking about it like something extremely good. Something is nice. And it was almost a year and a half ago. And they were talking about basically enslaving people by restricting their movement. They didn't use, of course, the word enslaving. But it was right out of the playbook of the socialist and communist theory. Because the theory that everything is good which is promotes the herd, but everything is bad that promotes the freedom of the sheep, individual sheep. So that's the simple explanation that I can give you and your listeners today. Any kind of tyranny starts with the limiting the individual freedom, and it always starts with the religion, property rights, weapons, education, and sources of information. It's as old as goes back to Romans.
When we come back, we're going to explore that timeline.
Okay.
You breathe just at the wrong time. We punish people for breathing on the radio. No inhaling. All right. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back with you. We're at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Robbers open their arms to the young searching foreigner. To the heart of America, people were waiting in line for a place by the river.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
And if there comes a time,
to make a choice. Just look towards the west and find a friend. Oh, Nikita, you will never know anything about my home. I'll never know how good it feels to hold you.
We're back with Arkady Fakharovich.
Ooh, behind, good one.
Behind the Iron Curtain, part two.
I get two more shots at that.
I know.
It's the little things that amuse us here.
Yeah.
We have a tiny little box we bring in every Sunday morning. We take out all the little things, and then we just we have fun with them. So,
it's the paint fumes.
It is the paint fumes, probably. With all the stuff that's going on right now here in this country, does it give you the creeps?
Yes, because when I left former Soviet Union 35 years back, I never thought that I will be caught into doing what I'm doing and what I'm seeing here. Sometimes it pains me. A lot of times it pains me to see this magnificent ship called the United States sailing to the place I came from. And I have no formula of how effectively give the information to our people here. And there is a lot of broadcasters and writers and thinkers who do an excellent job, much better than I do, informing people, but yet we're far away from explaining how wonderful this country is. In fact, if you look at the Hollywood and our publications, I'm talking about fictional literature, you will find that in the last 60 years, there was not a movie made, not a book written, that will show an entrepreneur in the positive light. It's by design, because the business and entrepreneurship is always shown in the bad light as a greedy money hunk guys that cheat, that in order... And this is something, by the way, one of my favorite rabbis told me that in his book, Thou Shall Prosper. Why? What separates the poor man from the rich man? Why is the rich man rich and poor man is poor? And he gave me a brilliant, in my opinion, explanation, which is so true, that if you accept a premise, while you're a child, early on, it happens early on in life, that business is dirty and crooked, money are dirty and bad. In order to get wealthy, you have to take from somebody else. You're convicting yourself to a lifelong poverty, because it doesn't guarantee that you will be rich if you believe that business is good and noble, and money is good, and the profit is excellent. But it's a prerequisite to become wealthy. Unfortunately, a lot of young people today, they don't believe it, because a press does a very good job for the crooks that trying to enslave us and telling us that business is not good and business is not something that you have to engage and that it's sleazy activity, and it's nothing truthful about it. In fact, nobody stopped to think that Madoffs are an exception, that mostly business cannot survive if it's crooked. It's found out very quickly. The only business activity that is crooked is Federal Reserve Act. And maybe someday you will invite me back and I would love to talk about Federal Reserve System, because Federal Reserve is a very bad thing that happened to our nation. And It's a fascinating story, much more interesting than any detective novel you can ever read. And hopefully I will be able to explain. There's several things that I talk about in my lectures, especially what is freedom, what's the difference between the mentality of a free versus mentality of the slave. And it's very, very interesting what distinguished free man. The free man, some people don't understand it when I tell them that the freedom starts with 100% responsibility, personal responsibility for personal action. If you look yourself in the mirror every morning or one morning and you're saying to yourself that today, from this day forward, everything that happens in my life, I am responsible. This is a thought of a free man. A slave always blames somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
A slave always creates a situation where, well, I'm not at fault. I'm sitting here poor and helpless because somebody did that to me. That's a slave mentality. And we have a lot of those people today. In fact, today, the enemies of our countries are succeeding because we have a war today between the freeloaders and producers. And the freeloaders are not very, they don't require much, but they rather sit in their little piece of dung and being secure and comfy. See, another prerequisite of a free man mentality, you have to have no fear. If you have fear, which is the most hideous sin you can find, it's a cradle of all evil things that we humans do to each other, like envy, jealousy, murder, and et cetera, et cetera. You have to have no fear. If you come into a place of work and you're trying to deduce, is your boss in a good mood or in a bad mood, instead of putting your energy into doing your job well, you're not a free man. You're a slave. The other thing that the free man always accepts as a postulate, as an axiom, which is truth, that there is no such thing as security. You, and only you, are the best security for yourself. You cannot live your life with a dream of a pension. And that's basically a recipe, in my opinion, for a free society when those values are instilled in our children early on. Do we have that? No. How we get there? I don't know. I wish I knew the recipe, because sometimes I wonder what would happen if Arkady would be able to yell at every corner every day telling people the truth about certain things. What made the individual free? What make you wealthy? It's your labor, your sweat of your bra, not a lottery winning or sitting in front of a TV and watching Dancing with the Stars.
What? So, you think, mean that doesn't make people smarter?
Like, I just was sitting in a coffee shop not very long ago, and I was hearing two young people, a man and a woman, who were in their 20s, and they were discussing the fact that he was interviewed for the job, and he told her that he refused the job because they offered him a slave labor at $10 an hour. And I thought, my God, you're already a slave, but you don't even know that. And the reason he has already an element of the slave mentality, because it will never occur to him to create his own job. And yet, this individual, with a very limited English, sitting in the Starbucks coffee shop, thought to himself that he already deserves a corner office and a skyscraper on the 12th floor without putting any work to it. And that's very, very dangerous, because in this kind of mentality, you cannot really tell him that, hey, you can make your own life, you can sail on your own, you can create whatever you want. But it requires work. My God, work? Gee.
Yeah, that's just horrible, isn't it? How dare they? Yeah. How dare they?
Yeah, so I think that it has to start our revival and our climbing to health as a nation has to start with the local governments, our planning commissioners, city council, mayoral office, and stuff like that. For instance, we can collectively, like the state of Alabama, they refuse to accept Agenda 21, and I applaud them for that. And some counties kicking out ICLEIS, which is an arm of Agenda 21 that hoisted on us by no other but the Bush Senior, by United Nations. So we have lots of work to do, and it has to start with our young. It has to start with information. And you guys are doing an excellent job by talking about things like that, and I just applaud you for it. So we can talk more about it if you will invite me back.
Absolutely. Well, we just pretty much we say hi, then Elizabeth tries to rattle off your name, and then we just let you go.
So that would be the Behind the Iron Curtain Part 3.
Yeah. behind the Iron Curtain. That's what we're going to do. We're going to add more behinds.
Yeah, I would like to explain to people how really the Federal Reserve System works.
And all right, we're gonna come back and do that in the final 25 minutes.
Yeah, we'll grab a quick break.
What?
Get ready. It's Federal Reserve in 25 minutes or less. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes.
Well.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, okay. The home of Free Fire Media. Get coffee.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com. Miami Beach, BOAC, the edge of bed last night. On the way to paperback was on my knee. Man, I had a dreadful fight. I'm back in the USSR. You don't know how lucky you are. Back in the USSR.
We're back in the USA.
Hold on. That was me being the plane. You thought that was part of the record. Nope, it was me.
We're back.
All right.
We're going to talk Federal Reserve. You got to 20.
Oh, you wanted it to go into Federal Reserve? It's a semester.
We're just messing with you.
Yeah, just do first 25 minutes and then we'll just do messing part with three
you.
Later.
You can talk about whatever you want. We're just tormenting.
It's a wonderful program the guy's running. I can do whatever I want. That's, it's like a
that's code. That's code for who let you people on the air.
That's Carl's fault.
It's a wonderful program. I like that. I'm going to use that.
So basically, Federal Reserve was instituted by one of the tools of control. And they learned their lessons with three previous central banks that were instituted in our country. And there were two separate thought processes right at the inception of our country. And one was Alexander Hamilton. And we are not living in... basically, we live today in a Hamiltonian world. In my opinion, Alexander Hamilton was a very bad fellow because he believed in things that are different from what he wrote in Federalist Papers. And Federal Reserve System was a creation of Alexander Hamilton, who believed that our country needs to have a graduated tax, central bank, and government debt. And we're talking about at the inception of our nation. Thomas Jefferson was an opposing person, and unfortunately we live in the Hamiltonian world. We're not living in the Jeffersonian world, because Hamilton, who was killed in the duel, in my opinion, he wasn't It's an unfortunate, but I wish he would not come with his ideas at that time and persuade our first president, Washington, to institute the first bank. All three banks failed because they had 20 years charter, and the government didn't renew the charter. However, the fourth, the central federal reserve system that we have now, doesn't have that 20-year-old charter, and it's existing for 98 years now. And you can see the devastation that all four banks created in our nation before and today. So how did it happen? What happened and why? In 1900s, our country experienced an incredible prosperity. We had charter and non-charter banks. Non-charter banks, meaning private banks and private hands, charter banks were chartered by the federal government. And private small mom-and-pop banks were growing like mushrooms. At that time, our society our business was operating on two premises. It was frugality and debt. Now, most of the time, the business, when it made a profit, would redeposit those profits into the business. In other words, they invest the profits into the business, and that's how the business would grow. And if they would borrow money, it was borrowed by a much higher rate of return that we see today, and it was much shorter term of the loan. So, non-charter banks were taking, they were about 76% of all banks, and they were providing much better service. The big boys like Rockefellers and Morgans and others, they saw it as a trend of losing quote-unquote business. And there are five reasons why the Federal Reserve System was instituted. Number one is the competition. Number two, get control of the country's legal tender, which means money. Number three, convinced the Congress that it's all done for the benefit of the public. The number four was eliminating and restricting private property rights, but it was forward. So there were five reasons, and I don't remember all five now. I have to go back to my notes, and I will tell you. But basically, it was to create a monopoly, a privately held monopoly of the banking cartel over our currency, and they succeeded. So they met seven crooks that met in Jekyll Island in 1910. Those crooks were, and the country needs to know their heroes. Nelson Aldrich, Senator, Major Majority Whip in the Senate. Abram Pat Andrew, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. I would like to your listeners to note that the Federal Reserve bankers, the future Federal Reserve, the bankers and the government were in debt from the get-go. Frank Wunderlich, President of National City Bank of New York. Henry Davids, a senior partner of J.P. Morgan & Company. Charles Norton, president for First National Bank of New York. Benjamin Strong, my favorite, Benny Strong, who was lieutenant of J.P. Morgan, who was our first head of Federal Reserve System, and who presided over Great Depression. It was done by design. Paul Warburg, a Kuhn, Loeb & Company, who was German, and he was brought in from Germany because he had experience with central banking in Germany. All of these guys met under the cloud of incredible secrecy in Jekyll Island, Georgia, to concoct this plan. They came under assumed name. They met at the J.P. Morgan Clubhouse in Jekyll Island, and they spent a couple of weeks, and they decided that the only way to do it is just to fool the Congress. And they created with Mr. Aldridge's tutelage, they created this plan to present the plan that was a banker's plan. It was designed to fail because the public didn't trust the bankers, especially the big ones. And they created another plan under the name of another senator. It was exactly identical, but who reads the plans? Who reads the laws? And they shove it into our throats right before the Christmas time of 1913, where a lot of guys went for vacation. And, of course, Woodrow Wilson signed it into law on the 23rd of December. And so let me, because I have only 25 minutes and I will not talk about...
Oh, and guess what? We have to take another... And guess what? We have to take another quick break.
Okay.
And then we're down to like 8 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to turn the heat up on you. We're going to... You're going to be
all
in the...
All right, all right.
You're going to be in the bonus round when we come back. Oh, my gosh. We'll be back with Arcadi in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to We the People Radio at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this. God bless the USA.
Sadly enough, there are high schools across the country that are not playing this song because it might offend someone. We've got work to do,
folks. That's the politically incorrect version.
We like the politically incorrect version of everything. Arcadi, what a great lead-in song for your final final 9 minutes.
My goodbye song.
Yeah, there you go.
I have to tell you that I just look at my watch and I see that we have only about, 8 minutes. There is no way I can explain the intricacies of the Federal Reserve System and how this box with pulleys and sprockets really works. But maybe we can schedule another time
sure.
for 2 hours because I will... keep your listeners on the edge of their seats.
We love a good cliffhanger. You know, it's always... Actually, I find it really irritating.
To continue with introduction into Federal Reserve,
sure.
what happened in 1913, and actually what happened in 1912, just a little history into election of that time. The William Howard Taft was president. William Howard Taft was a Republican, and he wasn't so keen on the idea of a central bank because he was an attorney, and maybe he knew a little bit of history of our banking system before him. So he had to be replaced by an opinion of the bankers who met at Jekyll Island. So they did something that Mike Huckabee did to Mitt Romney in 2008. Teddy Roosevelt, this comfy Teddy, was already two times president, and he threw his hat into the ring and challenged Taft, effectively splitting the vote. Teddy Roosevelt didn't have a prayer of winning the election, but he split the vote in order to elect Woodrow Wilson. In my humble opinion, Woodrow Wilson is the worst piece of human excrement that ever occupied the White House. And I
tell
can
us
tell
what you
why.
Really think.
Speaking politically incorrect.
Tell us what you really think.
We like it.
No, we do like it.
Well, let me tell you why Woodrow Wilson was
otherwise
a very bad dude. Number one, he was an academic. He was a professor. He was a socialist. He wrote a book about the Constitution, and you can read this book and you can see what kind of a disdain this man had for the Constitution of the United States. He also had his hands bloodied up to the yin yang because of Lusitania's story. If you remember, Lusitania was a case that involved the United States in World War One. The Lusitania was a cruise ship that was kind of reconstructed into a war troop carrier, and it was basically let 190 passengers, 90 Americans, and 100 Europeans that were traveling to New York, and the British cruiser was withdrawn, and the German submarine torpedoed it. That was an agreement between the British government and our government, i.e. Woodrow Wilson, to get us into the war. Woodrow Wilson was presiding over segregation of every government department. In fact, he demanded that every potential employee produce the picture just to make sure that the face in the picture was not black. He also, segregation of the armed forces. On his second term as the president, he suffered a stroke, and the country was governed by his wife. His vice president didn't even know that the president was incapacitated. So, and also, Woodrow Wilson was a weakling who was led to be manipulated by Edward Mandel House. A lot of people don't know who that man was, but Edward Mandel House was a Texan of Irish descent. And he had a theory, if I control two senators of my state, I control the state. If I control the president, I control the country. Woodrow Wilson allocated the room for Mandel House in the White House where he was advising, quote-unquote, this fabulous president. And he also was an advisor to FDR. And that was the person who was in the White House. So Teddy Roosevelt was instrumental, and he was running on the progressive ticket, and Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive. He wasn't a conservative, and he was instrumental in electing this guy into office. Also, Woodrow Wilson was instrumental in keeping Bolsheviks in power after the coup by providing the money. So he was true to his socialist communist beliefs, and he was a very bad dude for our nation. And yet 6 years later, he made a statement because he knew he was dying and he wanted to be remembered as the guy who realized his mistake. He said, "This is a sad day because I realized that I inadvertently destroyed my country by letting the Federal Reserve Act to pass." So this is the guy who was then in power, and Democratic Congress, Democratic Senate, and the Federal Reserve was born, and this is what we deal with today. So when you see Ben Bernanke at the in front of the Banking Committee of Congress, and he talks about things. He, by the way, Ben Bernanke was a very brilliant tax man. He has a doctorate degree, taught in Princeton. But when you embed with the devil, you have to do a devil's bidding. And I would tell you that Federal Reserve System is the hideous system that deprives us of our property. And that's something that I can tell you later on because I don't have time even to start because it's a fascinating story and it can be abolished. We can survive, and I'm very optimistic about our country. I think that we'll overcome our difficulties, but in order to do that, we have to abolish 16th, 17th Amendment and Federal Reserve Act. I was sometimes laying at night in my bed. I wondered, do we have statesmen in Congress with balls to do that? And I truly want to believe that.
Wait a minute, we need to laugh.
Oh, we don't have time to laugh. Shut up, Elizabeth.
So, but again, we can laugh, and I enjoy being on the air with you, ladies and Bob, because you are a very cheerful bunch.
Yeah, we're generally like politically incorrect. So
I always believe if you're going to deliver bad news, you should do it cheerfully.
Yeah. But Federal Reserve System is the most misunderstood, misquoted, and there is a lot of false information about Federal Reserve. To give your listeners a gist before I say goodbye, Federal Reserve is the not just a private banking cabal, and it's not just the government. It's a partnership between private banking cabal and United States Congress, where bankers got the privilege of issuing legal tender, issuing currency, and charging interest on every unit of currency in our country. In exchange, Congress gets an unlimited amount of cash. With that, I wish you and your listeners a wonderful day.
Wow, and I will be happy. Good. You're watching your clock. You're awesome.
Good.
Arkady Fakhtorovich. So I hope you guys tune back in for part three. We'll be right back.
So I hope to be on your program again. It was fun.
We're doing it. All right, Bob, you want to sign out for us?
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Arkady. We'll look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's been We the People, and Don Shulman is up next here at KCNR Shasta Renning. Thanks for listening.
And he's all good.